Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition. Providing a sounding board for mental health issues. And making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber, and I want you all to tell your friends about us. Go to mainstreammentalhealth.org, or you can go to the Mental Health News Radio Network and listen to us online, and share it with all your friends. Don't be a stranger when it comes to that. Well, today we have, I think, somebody who has a story for us that's very apropos. We've had a lot of stress going on with all of the issues in politics and the Supreme Court justice and people getting upset about this or upset about that. And I think the really amazing thing we got going today is we have experts out there who talk about what are some things that might be able to help us in dealing with this. And today we have Dr. Adams, and she wrote Living on Automatic, and we're going to bring her on here and have her tell a little bit about herself and tell us what she means by automatic. So, Dr. Adams, welcome to my show.
Oh, well, thank you, Dr. Huber. Welcome. Thank you.
So, you talk about how we're conditioned and we respond on automatic, essentially, because of that condition. Can you tell me more about what you're meaning for my audience?
Well, automatic living is living on autopilot, where you do things every day, you relate to people every day in ways that are automatic, which means they take place without your thinking about what you're doing. And so we tend to get into ruts in our relationships when we don't think about what we're doing. And the whole concept of emotional conditioning is a new concept that we are bringing forward in our book, Living on Automatic. The book was started by my mentor, Homer B. Martin, who's an adult psychiatrist, and it was finished by me after Dr. Martin's death, and I'm a child and adult psychiatrist. And what we discovered is there were patterns in the ways that families were raising children that were common from one family to another, and that these fit the idea of conditioning. Now, you'll probably recall from school that Pavlov conditioned his dogs to salivate when handlers entered the room and they didn't bring any food. So conditioning is a type of learning that occurs without us being aware of what we're learning. And we discovered that parents teach their children how to behave, think, and experience their emotions and conduct the relationships through this emotional conditioning by about age three. And this sort of sets up people to live automatically in their relationships and to have a whole host of emotional problems and relationship problems and conflict and substance abuse and anxieties and depressions. So that, in a nutshell, that's what's in the book, and that's what the automatic aspects are of living automatically without thinking.
Now, When I think about that, I always think, you know, Pavlov's dogs did not have any intent in their actions. And you know, as humans, we have that higher consciousness, and we hopefully have some goal-driven activities. How does that affect that stimulus response mechanism that you're talking about?
Well, what we discovered, and the book is based on our 80 years, our 8 decades of work with patients of all ages, from infants
wow.
through people in their 90s. And there were several thousand patients that we worked with in in-depth dynamic psychotherapy. So we got to know them very well. And we were surprised, because what we learned is that people have a lot less rational control over what they do in their lives than they think they do. And it was surprising to us. We weren't aware that people were going to be so conditioned. So the key to what we call deconditioning therapy is to learn how to stop the automatic responding to the people in our close relationships, and how to introduce thinking about what we're doing. And we take people through that are in psychotherapy with us. We take them through the deconditioning treatment, and they learn to do that so that they can once again become more rational with their decision-making about relationships.
Wow. Wow. And I think you have a lot of validity in that, because I know, you know, we are animals, and biologically, we try to take the path of least resistance. And if we can just respond without having to engage our conscious thought, that's what we tend to do. I mean, that's why firefighters practice in buildings that they set on fire intentionally, so that they don't, you know, start thinking about, oh my gosh, there's fire there. They just respond, and it's a mechanistic
yeah.
kind of reaction. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot to that, and the reality is that we do want to, you know, conserve our resources, and that includes our energy levels.
Well, I think that we really don't know what's happening. I think it's a rationalization to say that we want to conserve. I think that we just don't know what was done to us as children, because it's become
okay.
so automatically a part of us. And that's what psychotherapy can do. It can take the sort of hidden automatic part of you and bring it out into the light. And then each patient becomes like a horse whose blinders have been taken off. And instead of just seeing what's been straight in front of them all these years, they get to look at the whole world in a broader vista and say, wow, I didn't know that existed. I didn't know those kinds of people existed. I didn't know I'd been restricting my life to just certain types of people. Now I can really make more choices for myself, which may be better, since this is Mental Health Day, may be better for my mental and emotional well-being.
Exactly. So now, do you find that this is something that you incorporate with other therapeutic orientations in therapy, or is this are you using this in and of itself?
Well, you know, dynamic psychotherapy has a long trajectory in history, back to Freud, of the idea of trying
mm-hmm.
to sit down with a person and dig in and find out the things that control your life that you've not been aware of. So that's a traditional approach that we use, dynamic psychotherapy.
Okay.
But what we met with people 1 to 3 times a week, anywhere from 2 or 3 years up to decades. So we
wow.
got to know people really, really well.
Definitely.
And how they operated in their relationships. Now, the part that's new is the deconditioning therapy that we applied to the concept of conditioning and how to decondition people, because a lot of people say, oh, I don't know why I did that. Again, I didn't want to yell at my children. I hate yelling at my children, but I always seem to do it again and again. Well, that's the automatic the automatic
right.
part of living on automatic. And we take that and we help them dissect where they learned that from, what makes them do it, and then how they can stop it. So we call it a deconditioning therapy. Now, it doesn't imply a behavioral approach like most conditioning therapies, deconditioning
okay.
therapy do. We used good old-fashioned psychodynamic psychotherapy.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of something new and old.
Well, that's cool. And so once you start and implement that change in perspective and get them to think, actually think, once you start that process, do you find that there's a certain amount of time that you expect that to turn them around? Like, you know, I know I get insurance companies that come in and say, okay, you get 12 sessions and, you know, that's what you get. So, what am I looking at as a practitioner, for example, if I start using this? Is this a quick thing? Is this something that I need to plan for a longer term kind of situation? You've had obviously you did a wide range of therapeutic time span that you just gave me there and different ages. Does it impact the age? You know, if somebody's 6, is it going to be shorter or longer than somebody who's, say, 25 or 40?
Well, it does take less time to treat children because they haven't
okay.
been conditioned as long. And what
okay.
we found was that once conditioning starts early in childhood, it tends to get reinforced by all the people around a child. So the longer you're reinforced, say into your 50s or 60s, the more difficult it is to get the tentacles of conditioning out of a person. So it takes longer to treat older people than it does children. It's not a quick fix solution, but the person didn't get into the situation in a quick fix way. It took years
right.
and years and years of being conditioned. So what we discovered was that it takes about 2 years for people to kind of grasp what their own personal conditioning style was in their family. And then after the 2 years, it takes a variable amount of time for the person to undo the conditioning. And the variable is controlled by the severity of the conditioning that they got in childhood. In other words, say they were a severely abused child by many
okay.
people as children. That will take a lot longer because of the severity of the abuse by numerous people. If there was, for example, one episode of abuse by one person that was not a person the child had consistently daily contact with,
mm-hmm.
then that's a mildly conditioned situation, and it will take less time. So it just depends on your own personal types of experiences. And you don't have to, the only variable is not abuse. You can grow up in a perfectly normal-looking family and still have gotten very strong emotional messages about how you should be that turn out to be very severe. So it's not a quick fix thing, and it's not a thing that people should enter into lightly.
Okay.
And it's not a thing that you should enter into when you're in absolute crisis, because when you're in crisis, you can't really think straight. So you have to kind
right.
of be at a lull in your life and say, you know, I'd really like to know what makes me tick. I really have some depressions occasionally. I have anxiety about this and that. Every now and then I get an eating disorder problem, or I resort to drinking alcohol or using illicit substances. And I think it might be good for me to figure out, sit down with somebody and find out, why do I tend to do these things?
Exactly. So, it's not a crisis type thing. It's one of those, hey, my life is relatively stable. I got a few problems here, but I want to make my life better. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Do it when you're not in crisis is the best. time.
Cool. Well, as my listeners are listening to our conversation, where is a website that they could go and find out more about not just your book, but you and what you're doing?
Well, my website is Doctor, spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R, Christine, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Adams, A-D-A-M-S.com, Dr. Christine Adams.com. Has a lot of information about me and the book, and there are several hundred blogs on there that have to
awesome.
Do with emotional conditioning, and there are radio interviews on there, and I have a YouTube site, a LinkedIn site, Twitter site, and Facebook.
Right. Now, getting back kind of to the concept, what was the stimulus? How did you guys come across or come up with this idea of emotional deconditioning?
The treatment?
Yes.
Or the problem? Well, this was Dr. Martin, who was my mentor's sort of creation that he began to put together many years ago, about 30 years mm-hmm. ago. And he just began to see these patterns in people. And in doing dynamic psychotherapy, he began to interpret to them what the impressions were that he was getting from what they told him about what the problem was and how it had come about in their family as when they were little children. And so he just kept working away in the dynamic therapy and kept making these interpretations, and people were like, oh my gosh, I never knew that. And so he began getting feedback from his patients that these interpretations were helpful, that clarified what the messages were they got mm-hmm. early in life about how they were to see themselves and how they were to express their emotions and behave and what role they were supposed to play in their relationships. So with his telling them about the information he heard that they were saying, they began to get better. And then came, I entered the picture as his protege, as a student, when I was a resident in psychiatry. And he began asking me about children because he didn't see children, but he heard all these stories from his adult patients of their childhoods. And he said, what are you seeing in the children that you work with? And we had many discussions over about 30 years before he died. And we pieced together what happens to people all the way from infancy through old age, through people in their 90s, and we pieced together the deconditioning therapy approach also, and I used it with children, and I helped parents understand how they'd been raising their children and why with a specific child they were having the problems they were having, and parents would grasp it, and I would say, now try at home doing the opposite of what you've been doing with your child and see if that helps your child's problem. Try deconditioning them away from the path they've been on to bring them back to the middle and provide some balance in their personality. Try something different. And they would try something different, and they would report back to me, oh, my gosh, this worked really well. Instead of my child, you know, hand washing 50 times a day, now they're only doing it 5 times a day. So it gave us feedback that the deconditioning psychotherapy was helpful.
So I'm sitting here thinking as we talk about, you know, because now you're talking about kids and you were talking about adults earlier. And part of what you're doing is teaching them to think and think on their own. My question then is, isn't that in itself a type of conditioning? And so you're reconditioning somebody after you've got the bad thinking style or I don't the conditioning changed, correct?
Well, I guess you could call it reconditioning, but really you're taking conditioning out of the picture because conditioning occurs without your knowing what's happening. And if you introduce thinking, then you think about what the possibilities are before you react. And so that takes it out of the conditioning realm altogether.
Okay. All right.
So you're right. We introduced the concept of thinking. How do you introduce thinking to A, slow things down, and to B, evaluate the possibilities, especially how can I get my needs met in a situation, and how can another person get their needs met in a situation instead of me just automatically letting them have their way every time something comes up between us? How
exactly.
Do we take it out of the realm of the personalities and get it back to the realm of, okay, here's the situation. What's called for? What does each one of us need to do or say or think in this situation to get the task done? Because in most relationships, what we discovered is we respond to the role of the other person rather than the situation we're in. And so it becomes an automatic response. And we discuss in the book the two main roles that we discovered that people exist in their relationships.
Wow. So that is actually a pretty big leap there, I think. You know, I think if we could get all our patients to actually start thinking that this could be very significant in their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Thinking is the antidote to conditioning.
Cool.
It really is.
All right. Well, as we're starting to wrap this up now, do you can they just go to Amazon, or can they buy the book through your website? How do they go about getting your book?
Yes. Thanks for asking. The book is available on Amazon. It's available at the Barnes & Noble website, and it's also available at the publisher's website. And the publisher is abc-clio.com. abc-clio.com. So any three of those places, you can buy the book.
And give the name one more time so my listeners can make sure they've got that all packed up.
It's called Living on Automatic, offering a groundbreaking new concept of relationships and personalities and explaining why we have relationship conflict in our closest relationships with spouses, children, parents, other family members. And it also gives many ideas for how to improve relationships. Living on Automatic by Homer Martin and Christine Adams, MD.
Well, thank you, Dr. Adams. And that I appreciate you coming on, Dr. Christine Adams and her book. Please check it out as we wrap up our show for today. And I'd like to remind everybody to follow us at mainstreammentalhealth.org. You can also find us at drpsycho.org, which is drpsycho. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans, so buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram @ Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter @ Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.